Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach.
Give me great food.
Tacos.
Give me adventure.
Hiking.
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise.
Give me some smiles.
Cheese.
Give me more beaches.
Beaches.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
What do the most successful growing businesses have in common? They're working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
This episode deals with some heavy content, including substance abuse and sexual violence. So please take care while listening.
Cane. Any cane here? That was Fruit Loop.
Oh, I heard of Fruit Loop. I've heard that name.
And there's the Three Amigos.
Who are they?
Randy Man, 8-Ball, and Sarge, all dead. Randy Man, he was murdered. 8-Ball, he died of malnutrition. And Sarge, Agent Orange, took him.
So he's a Vietnam vet.
Yeah.
Cece Ryder, who spent more than 20 years riding the rails, is looking through her photo albums.
Yeah. There's Peter Billy on a gondola. Dust in the Wind's dead. Ghost is dead. Oswald, he just disappeared off the face of the earth.
I kept asking every train rider I met what it would take for my daughter Ruby to survive on the rails. And some of the older hobos told me I should find Cece. She knew more than anyone else what it was like for a woman out there. The other shallow pop culture reason I'm excited to meet her is her name.
Cece Ryder, see what you done done.
She must have earned it somehow. So I've traveled out to Havre, Montana, with winter coming on, to learn what I can from Cece. I'd met some nice people from the rails, but I also knew there were criminals who rode the trains, and there were railroad gangs who fought each other for territory. What would it take for Ruby to survive out there? What would hobos expect of my daughter, a newcomer in their world? And what should she watch out for? When she threw her sleeping bag down in the boxcar, who would be standing nearby? To understand hobo life today, I had to track down more riders. I'm Danelle Morton, and this is City of the Rails.
Are you hungry? I got chicken noodle soup, homemade.
No, I'm not hungry. I think I'm on a beer diet.
Cece's reputation is huge, but she's tiny, not even 5 feet tall. She has straight gray blonde hair tucked under a cap that's decorated with patches of long ago railroads, markers of how long Cece rode. She invites me into her trailer out of the cold of October in Montana and settles down in one of the plush, comfy chairs for a smoke.
So you keep your cigarettes in the freezer?
Yeah.
Keeps them fresh?
Yeah, hippie shit.
Hippie shit. Cece keeps the windows and front door open so that she can smoke inside, and you can hear the trains passing on the tracks nearby. The trailer is full of Cece's relics and keepsakes left by riders who've passed through.
This is a bracelet that some kid made me for my birthday out of beer tabs.
Oh, look at that. It's actually wearable.
Yeah.
The walls are tagged with drawings and graffiti, like, still crazy after all these beers. Many hobos have lightened their loads by leaving something behind as tribute to Cece.
I even have hair. This chick cut off her hair and gave it to me. And it got arrowheads, real arrowheads on it.
People past and present take to the rails on a whim, on a dare, or on the run. Or maybe it's a bit of all of those, like I suspected with Ruby. Stacey knew hundreds of writers, and she knew their stories. Maybe she could help me understand more about why Ruby ran off to hop trains. So we began with how Stacey started writing. It was in Amarillo, Texas, and what Stacey told me sounded like a country song, but a sad one.
My boyfriend and his brother beat me up, and after I got a little bit well, a friend of mine took me to a hobo bar. And to get back at my boyfriend, I kissed this tramp on a Friday, screwed him on a Saturday, hobo married him Sunday, and then I took him to a judge on a Monday.
Who knows what the difference was between a hobo wedding and an actual wedding, but with her new husband Broken Arrow, Stacey had both.
And then he says, you want to go and watch me catch out? I went, yeah. So, you know, I got my muni skirt on, my high heels, my makeup, my hair's all done up. And I go to the catch out dock there in Amarillo, Texas. He says, get up on this boxcar with me and check it out. So he toted me up there, and next thing I know, I hear and a jerk, like, what is that? He says, well, you're riding now.
Stacey might not have been prepared to start riding, but she decided to continue traveling with Broken Arrow, and he showed her right away she'd have to give up her old life if she wanted to come with him on the rails.
My first backpack, I had my lingerie, some dresses, some heels, makeup, curling iron in it. Like, what are you going to plug that into, a tree? I'm wearing $400 high heel stilettos. We get to Pueblo, Colorado. How am I going to walk on these railroad rocks? So he breaks off my high heel. Not talking about mad. Yeah, so I went from high heels to combat boots, to having money to holding cardboard.
Cece's link to the regular world got broken off with those high heels, but that didn't scare her. She was ready to leave her old life behind. This new life Broken Arrow promised her was unpredictable, but exciting. She was eager to enter this unknown world, and after she did, she stayed for 2 decades. But Ruby hadn't been swept onto the rails by a man, at least not as far as I knew. But what did I know? Young women now are different from Cece, who hasn't ridden in decades. So I also looked for younger women closer to Ruby's age who could tell me about riding today. Through a friend I met at a party, I found Morgan, who'd ridden for 2 years.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for agreeing to talk to me. Now, do you know what I'm doing?
Morgan, like Cece, took a blind leap onto the rails and then scrambled to catch up with her new reality. And like Cece, Morgan turned to the rails when she needed to make a break for it. She had struggled with heroin addiction in her teens and spent a year in jail for drugs when she was 18. And like pretty much all riders, Morgan's journey onto the rails began with her leaving her possessions behind. It started when Morgan was strung out again, back home in Maryland, trying to hold on to her car.
Funny enough, I actually, the night before, had gotten a bunch of drugs, and I told the drug dealer that I would give him my car. So really, when it all comes down to it, it was that moment of waking up and saying, holy shit. And him and I both knowing, you know, I am not giving him my car. We called my friends, who both were train hoppers, and I said, we want to leave. What do? Where do we go? So we were like, we're just going to drive until we literally can't drive anymore and try to make it to Florida to this guy that was going to put us on our first freight train.
But when they got to Georgia, someone stole Morgan's car, and she had a decision to make. Go back home to Maryland and try to make it right, or jump a freight and leave it all behind.
The car was gone. Everything that was in it was gone. And all we had was the clothes that we had on.
Morgan decided she was going through with it. And her friend Kayla gave her a quick lesson in the kinds of things she needed to get before she hopped a train, like cotton underwear.
Because you're not going to be able to change them much, and they're just breathable and any other material.
But something else Kayla said stuck with Morgan. Something she didn't want to consider, but knew she had to.
something that she stressed to me that was like, I remember kind of sinking in myself when she said this, but she said, you really, as a woman, want to dress as much like a man as possible. You don't want to wear things form-fitting. You know, you really need to protect yourself because you're, you know, you have to think. And I, you know, I didn't think too far into this, but we're going to be in like the biggest cities in the country and in the most dangerous spots in the United States.
With these warnings, Kayla was advising Morgan on how to fit in with the other travelers. But Morgan didn't have what she needed. She was on the run with her car stolen.
I think I had like 3 skirts and like 3 shirts and a few things.
So Morgan's high heels to combat boots moment came standing in a Walmart. It was the moment when she embraced just how brazen she'd need to be to survive on the rails.
I remember my first pack, I stole it from Walmart. And it was such a, just in the moment, thought. And then I was just like, you know what, I'm just going to try this. Because it's less than $1,000. So if I do get caught, whatever.
She went through the store stuffing the backpack with cotton underwear and hoodies and jeans, all boxy and loose, everything she'd need. Once it was full, she faced the big moment, walking out past the cashiers.
I remember my brain saying, walk out like it's yours. No one, it won't bring attention. And who's crazy enough to walk in and do that? And I kept it so cool, but it was like inside of me, the biggest adrenaline rush. I remember it being just my heart pounding, pounding, pounding. And I got away with it, and that was my first pack, and I had it all the way up to my first trip to California, hopping trains and hitchhiking. So I had it for a very long time.
Walking into the parking lot with that backpack, Morgan had crossed the threshold into the life she was taking on. Yes, she would be homeless, but not just because she was down on her luck. She'd walked into it willingly, eagerly, both feet first. Around the same time I met Morgan, I met another writer, Alexi Wood. Alexi was a different kind of traveler. He was more like the writers Mike Brody told me about early on, the kids choosing to live in poverty to see the country that way.
Even as a teenager, I just was like, that's bullshit. There's got to be something better than this garbage.
Mike Brody said there were plenty of hobos like this, from middle-class homes, families with assets. My daughter was one of them. So I was eager to hear how Alexi ended up writing. Maybe I could learn something about Ruby. Alexi told me he left right out of high school, just like Ruby. He looked out at the working world ahead of him and knew he didn't want a life bound up by the pursuit of money.
I wanted to travel and I didn't want to pay for hotels. You know, I worked hard to not spend money versus jobbing to make money. So I learned how to do things myself and find food, and you learn to live with very, very little money, and I feel like it was the freest I ever lived.
Living without money gave Alexi freedom he'd never felt before, freedom from living in the rut of the straight life. In a way, it was a form of protest, but it was also a thrill to be fully in control.
It was high adventure all the time. So I was hitchhiking and, you know, just train hopping, dumpster diving, you know, just living well off of the decadence of the society. I'd usually hitchhike during the day and then try to find a train yard or something and then hop a train and just sleep on it all night long and be cruising. Well, the appeal of it is the grittiness, the, you know, hiding from bulls and trespassing and just living in the cracks.
But like Ruby's friend Aaron told me, it goes way beyond living free just because you could. For some writers, this is a political act. As I was finding out, among hobos, there are a lot of anarchists.
You know, I know tons of punks who just hated money, wouldn't even touch money. Once you get past the idea that you need money, you just have your own, it's your own life. You have your own time. If time is money, then I'm time rich.
Alexi was happy living by his wits, open to whatever life brought his way. Even his very first ride affirmed his new sense of freedom.
I was going from San Antonio to Houston, and I was on a grainer. And I remember it had gotten to night time, and I got up on top of the Grainer, and it cuts right on the east side of the Houston downtown. And I just remember the cityscape and all the lights and just being up on top of this train. I remember specifically falling in love with train hopping with that Houston skyline. And I just felt like I could go anywhere and I could do anything.
Alexei had seen that skyline 100 times before, but from on top of a freight train, he was feeling the power of this boundless new life, unattached to the mundane world. He was hooked, and so he kept going for 9 years. Yes, he was giving up the comfort of knowing where he'd sleep, when he'd get to where he wanted to go, and who he'd spend his time with. But when you give up everything you know and leave behind the people you love, what do you gain?
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
There's places on train tracks that you can't go on a regular road. You know, I think back and I'm like, you can't, I'll never be able to see this again. One of the most beautiful views I ever saw and the coolest moments was crossing the Salt Lake and realizing that it was pink. And I was crossing it, you know, in a boxcar and looking down and just completely surrounded by just like pink water and just feeling like outside of this world, I guess. Like I was floating on like clouds.
When you first step into the city of the rails, you see a world unlike any other. But this beauty was a surprise to Morgan. She was first drawn to the rails by the promise of a new adventure.
I had always imagined all the, you know, adventure part of it and just like how cool the pictures were and how big the trains were and how small we are and how big that must feel to be a part of that.
That feeling of being part of something big is what draws a lot of drifters to the rails. The late author Lucius Shepard captured it well in his book, Two Trains Runnin'. I especially love this quote, which I thought sounded better in J.P. Wright's voice, the voice of a railroad man.
There's no doubt The riding on a freight car as it carries you through some moonlit, mysterious corner of the American night is a rush like mystical whiskey for anyone with half an imagination. It's loud, uncomfortable, and a lot of the time it's damn cold. But it's also romantic. You're riding with ghosts, those of Jack Kerouac, Jack London, and Ernest Hemingway, and all of the ghosts of famous hobos only hobos have heard of. And the fact that it's illegal and a little dangerous makes the moonlight extra silvery.
Beyond the hobos Shepard mentioned, other surprising people who spent time on the rails include actors Clark Gable and Steve McQueen, folk singer Burl Ives for you oldies, and even one of John D. Rockefeller's sons. For me, the most surprising hobo was Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas, who rode the rails during the Great Depression as part of the Children's Army of 250,000 boxcar kids. In his autobiography, he described hobos as kind and compassionate, adding that they had higher ideals than some of the men who ran our banks and were elders in the church. When Douglas became a Supreme Court Justice in 1939, the press called him Wild Bill for opinions that definitely were shaped by his time on the rails. In striking down a 1972 Florida vagrancy law that prohibited wandering without a stated purpose, Douglas wrote, "Wandering encouraged lives of high spirits rather than hushed, suffocating silence." Even with decades of distance, once you're a hobo, you're always a hobo, and that tie goes through the years. I once told a hobo I interviewed about William O. Douglas, and his response was, "We have a Supreme Court justice?" That's the community, the we, that people like Ruby and Morgan ran off to join. And when you're a hobo, you don't need much, but you do need your traveling partners. From what I'd learned, the best way to survive the trains is not to travel alone. You need your friends around you to protect you and to keep you from making some dumb mistakes. And even though Morgan hadn't been traveling long, she wasn't alone in that boxcar floating over the Great Salt Lake. She was with three friends, the ones she traveled with everywhere for years. Because as Morgan told me, the people you travel with become family.
When I was in Sub City and I met Shiny and Harper, they never left me. Like, we'd leave each other, like, from town to town and come back together, but they were like my traveling family. It was like us four against the world till the end.
Morgan said that if you're traveling alone, the first priority was to find a fellow traveler.
And if you just find one traveling kid and you meet up with them, then you'll find the rest. And then that's your community and that's your family. So no matter where you go, you have the ways and means to, like, find your community of traveling kids, and you're safe within that.
Finding your traveling family meant having people to watch your back, keeping you safe when you were drunk, and preventing you from making a fatal mistake. I was seeing from Alexi, Morgan, and Cece that there were so many different travelers, starry-eyed hippies, hardcore kids who like to fight, and eccentrics, including oddballs you might recognize from a coffee shop or a music festival. Morgan described some of them.
You got your, like, old-timey folk kids. Like, I remember seeing my first, like, old-time folk kid with some sort of, he had, like, a ukulele or a mandolin or something, and an actual cat that just sat on his shoulder and looked like Oliver Twist, the way he dressed.
No matter what stripe of hobo, the way they get information doesn't change. It's spread by word of mouth or in online forums like Squat the Planet or Reddit. Morgan told me new riders also learned from the people they met traveling. When they rolled into town, the experienced riders knew where to go to tap into the network. There were bars where travelers hung out. And since people come on and off the rails, riders who'd settled down for a while welcomed people passing through.
Like me, with no knowledge going into LA, I was by myself when I got there, and I thought to myself, where would traveling kids be? So that's where I went. A lot of them were hanging out actually in Hollywood. And so I found one, and then I found another, and then eventually by like the next day, I knew every single squat in Hollywood.
Squats are an important part of the hobo network, a place to stay for the night, usually in rougher neighborhoods.
So a squat is just any abandoned building, any abandoned shelter building, house that you go into and take it for your own, whether it be a short period of time, one night, or Some people squat in houses without being caught for years.
Not every traveler got let in on the secret of where the best squats were. Morgan said you had to think carefully about who you told. Even outlaws have hierarchies, and in the traveling world, experienced riders are at the top. At the bottom of the heap are oogles, the newbies, the loud, bumbling, clueless kids who don't know what they're doing. They get drunk and make noise, drawing attention that puts everyone at risk. And if an oogle proved to be too much trouble, that oogle would be left by the side of the track at the next stop.
If you were cool enough, it didn't fucking matter. But, like, you're annoying, maybe you are a liar, you're somebody that blows up the spot, like, you're super loud and, like, tell people shit you don't need to be saying, or, you know, like, people would be like, yeah, don't fucking tell him where we're going. Like, let's lose him.
No matter where they stand in the hierarchy, riders are always sizing up everyone they meet. There are some scary people mixed in among the characters with cats on their shoulders. And squats aren't the only places hobos come together. Many big train yards have places where hobos camp out nearby. But knowing where camp is doesn't mean you know who else will be there. Your campmates might be criminals or people who have a score to settle with another rider. You need to keep your wits about you. I met another hobo named Cherry Blackburn, who's sort of a modern CC rider. I kept hearing about Cherry from other hobos before I finally got to meet her. But when I did, Cherry told me about a night in camp with her boyfriend Eric. They were just hanging out, waiting for a train near Roseville. But when word got around that a notorious hobo named Dirty Mike was coming, the whole mood at the camp changed.
It was kind of a crazy night. There was a bunch of us under the Antelope Street Bridge, and we were all drinking, and somebody said, oh, you know, Mike's coming down here. Sure enough, Mike showed up down there, and he immediately, like, ran up to Eric and was like, we need to talk.
Cherry could see that Mike had a real problem with her boyfriend, so she tried to keep the peace.
He pulled Eric aside and they started walking away, and I could hear them, like, escalating and then arguing, and so I, like, walked up, like, hey, what the hell, you know, what's going on? You guys need to chill out. What, you guys don't need to fight. And out of nowhere, Mike just pulls a gun out. So he points the gun at me first, and then he was holding the gun at Eric's head, and everybody at this point noticed what was going on and was like, oh my god, and everybody ran over and were like, dude, you need to calm down. And right at that same moment, my friend Jason noticed that his dog was missing, and he's like, oh my god, my dog, where's my dog?
A lost dog was just enough to break the tension. Everyone started to look for it, even Mike.
Mike kind of forgot about what was going on for a second because Jason was good friends with Mike, and so we all, like, started looking for the dog, and then they found the dog dead on the overpass. And my friend Tim went to go buy a shovel so that we could bury the dog under there. And then Mike helped. Mike was, like, really bummed out for our friend, so he helped dig the hole to bury the dog. He went from being, like, a crazy gun-wielding maniac to distraught, trying to help out somebody in, like, a half-hour period.
A night in camp could be that unpredictable. So any seasoned hobo knows to size up the scene when they arrive. Who's around the fire? How well do you know the people you're with? If a fight broke out, could you trust them? In that climate, Cherry might have saved Eric's life. Did Ruby have companions who'd look out for her like that? But there's another hurdle that not everyone faces. Like the rest of the world, the hobo community is deeply patriarchal, and being a woman could be a liability. The women I spoke with were so strong, so confrontational, but despite how badass these women are, men run the scene. So CC Ryder has some advice for younger women about how to survive in camp.
Gotta have your etiquette. Keep your hands to yourself. Don't make googly eyes at anybody else. Just don't be stupid. And that's what I've tried to teach other women out there. Don't be flirting around. You know, do not cause chaos in camp. You do that on your own with your men. Y'all go off and beat each other up, I don't care. But you're not doing it in this camp.
Cece spent years as the only woman allowed to travel with her husband Broken Arrow's railroad gang, the Wrecking Crew. Sometimes, as she put it, that meant knocking some sense into other female riders to save them from worse violence.
One woman were in camp, there's six of us. 2 o'clock in the morning, I hear my brothers, if you don't shut the fuck up, we're gonna kill you. I rolled over and said, Broken Arrow, I gotta do something. So I got up and I said, my brothers told you to shut the fuck up. I suggest you do. She opened her mouth and I put my fist in her throat. And when I was done with her, I told her the only reason I whooped your ass is to save your life because you would not shut the fuck up.
On top of the danger in the yard, there was violence at its edges, a blow that could come from any direction. But what a wild move from Cece, punching a woman in the throat so men wouldn't come for her. Ruby is tough, smart, resourceful too. She makes fools of everyone, but she's not easy to fool. But after talking to Cherry and Morgan, I saw that wasn't enough in a world that was 87% male, according to a 2014 government survey of railroad trespassers. How would she beat the odds and survive? Would she ever get to be as old as Cece?
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Talking to former riders like Cece and Morgan showed me the rules and the risks of joining this mobile community, like Ruby did when she split at graduation. Outsiders might dismiss hobos as street beggars, never knowing that they have ideals, unspoken rules of conduct, and a social order. These were rules with long traditions, and if a new rider didn't pick up on these things quickly, she'd never graduate from Oogle status. But either way, there was one thing Ruby couldn't shake. She was a young woman. For women everywhere, that's a vulnerability. It definitely was on the rails. But it also has advantages, like when trying to make money on the street, she could make a lot more money and faster than men she traveled with. In the beginning of the day, riders fanned out to spange, meaning ask for spare change. As Morgan described it, all her friends pitched in.
If everybody goes off on their own to, like, make money during the day, Harper would always joke around and fuck with me because he'd be like, this is fucking bullshit. Like, I've been playing guitar all day, and this bitch fucking made all this money and didn't do a goddamn thing.
It's unfair to say Morgan made money doing nothing. In fact, she told me about a technique she used often, one that guaranteed she'd make a couple of bucks. And this was something she could only pull off because she's a woman.
I would go to grocery stores and I would go up to women and I would say, hey, I just got my period. I'm bleeding all over myself. Do you have a tampon? And that's all I would say, because here's the deal. A woman getting asked by another woman who's homeless, who just wants a tampon, she's not even asking for money. If I end up with tampons, great, because I needed them anyway, right? And then they're kind of pricey enough that if they didn't have a tampon, they were willing to give me $5, $10, $20, $50, $100.
The people Morgan traveled with would share everything, so it was a big advantage for the group to have a woman who could make $100.
It didn't matter if I made $20 and you made $2. We made $22. Like, we all made this, and we're going to split it and get fucking alcohol, you know? And we're going to get fucked up together. We're going to get food together.
Money wasn't something you held on to, Morgan said, or even thought of as yours. What little they had, they held together.
Without saying, like, it wasn't even like a conversation of like, all right, guys, we're getting this beer, fucking make sure everybody gets the same amount. People that, like, don't know traveling kids or people of this subculture, like, probably see them and think, like, wow, they're very scary. But, like, truly, some of these people are the most beautiful, kind, amazing people you'll ever meet.
I could feel that, the draw to a world where everything is shared and where people look out for each other. I was even grateful for it, because maybe these people could keep Ruby safe. And I knew she had people around her, because she was always calling me from other people's cell phones. So one day when I was trying to find her, I went through the list of phone numbers I'd jotted down from the various times she'd called me. On my third try, someone answered. I identified myself, said I was looking for Ruby, my daughter. I could hear them calling out to her, "It's your other mother!" Other mother? I was really hurt. Since she left, I wondered where I stood with her, so to feel like I'd been replaced really stung. So when she came to the phone, I confronted her, and she thought it was funny. Why was I so uptight about this? Of course she knew I was her mom. So maybe I was being uptight, and maybe I should be grateful she had people so close that she thought of them as family. But even that family was sometimes not enough. The City of the Rails is a world of extremes. It's a place where the beauty comes laced with danger. Where the same person who points a gun at you helps you find your lost dog minutes later. For women on the rails, this meant choosing who you traveled with carefully.
So in my experience, I usually had a boyfriend, and usually the groups of people that I was with were people that I knew.
Morgan was with the same guy for most of her time hopping trains. She was attracted to him, yes, but there was something pragmatic about the man she chose.
When I met him, the most attractive thing, like, he had a great personality and he was fun and stuff, but, like, I think it was just so attractive to me that, like, if, like, with him, he could just take me anywhere. But, like, that's what attracted me. If you knew what you were doing, that's where I wanted to be, because I wanted to learn from you and I wanted to be safe.
Morgan's boyfriend was more experienced than she was. He acted as both her guide and protector. This is typical for relationships between men and women on the rails. In fact, a woman by herself on the rails is expected to find a man. Morgan told me about one time when her boyfriend ended up in jail.
I was by myself for the first time, and I called my friend back home who had train hopped a little bit when she was younger, and she was like, "You gotta find a guy." I was like, "Okay."
She found an older writer who agreed she could tag along with him. He was nice. They drank and went to an anarchist bookstore. It was fun. But when the evening came to a close, her protector wanted payback.
When it was time to go to sleep, he, like, kind of, you know, was kind of, like, suggestive, like, "Hey, you want to share sleeping bags because, you know, it'll just be warmer." And I remember feeling really intimidated and, you know, scared a little bit just in general, because I'm by myself and I feel like almost you are protecting me, so I need to just do whatever you know what I mean? I don't want to upset you and be alone. And it didn't go all the way, but there was some, you know, physical, you know, things that happened that I did not want to happen, but did not feel strong enough in many different ways to kind of stick up for myself.
In some sense, you were consciously trading sex for protection.
Absolutely. Yep.
Definitely.
So do you think a lot of women end up making that bargain?
I'm sure. I can imagine. Especially women that are new.
Women new to the world of trains may not have their road dogs yet. For them, every night is like that one when Morgan's boyfriend was in jail. Morgan's stories of tampon panhandling and coerced sexual encounters aren't unique. Generations of female riders have faced the same dangers and taken advantage of the same opportunities. Of course, this is something that happens to women everywhere. We make trade-offs to survive. For Morgan, she tried dressing like a man, but that wasn't enough. Back in her trailer, Cece told me she took it a step further. She decided to act like a man.
And I think you asked me the question, why have I done manly things? Because I'm getting my anger out.
All these skills come in handy when you get on the rails.
Mm-hmm. I got an attitude. Don't want none, don't need none, but if you want some, come and get it.
But even a tough old bat like Cece traveled with a protector, Broken Arrow. His gang, the Wrecking Crew, was a small violent group that worked the rails in the 1990s. At that time, there were several vicious gangs like the Freight Train Riders of America and the Dirty 530, who fought each other for dominance on certain big rail lines. So after pulling Cece up onto a train and breaking off her stilettos, Broken Arrow still made his bride earn her place beside him.
They didn't break me in as a woman. He broke me in as a man. He broke me in as he was broken. I had to carry a case of bottled beer for 2 months without breaking any. I mean, we'd drink them, but we'd replace them.
Despite the hazing, Cece's loyal to the Wrecking Crew to this day. She even has Wrecking Crew tattooed on her ass. Broken Arrow was violent, but a great protector, and Cece needed him until she didn't. After 20 years of riding together, their time came to a close. She was getting older, and increased security was making the rails harder to ride. So when Broken Arrow beat her up again, Cece decided she was done.
It took me 40 years to grow up, Mother, and to find what I wanted to do. Granted, I had to get my ass beat again, but I finally found my hole.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love me. And me said, stop it. So I started all over again. And now I'm a homeowner, twice.
Cece bought a trailer and a piece of land in Montana, not far from the tracks. And even though she's settled down now, Cece hasn't left the rails. She hosts travelers, and she still keeps in touch with her fellow train hoppers.
None of us ride anymore.
Mm-hmm.
None of us. We're all on a crew change somewhere. And I go and see them, or they come and see me. The ones that are left, I can count on two hands that I rode with,
mm-hmm.
that I camped with, swapped gear with.
At age 62, Cece's seen a lot and lost a lot of friends. While she'd been brought into this life by Broken Arrow, this world is hers now, and she's seen how much it's changed. But she enjoys her new position as the grand old lady of the rails. And she's got words for the new class of riders.
Today, it's not a good day to ride freight. It's just full of stupid kids out there. You know, you get drunk and you get on a train, that means you got a good chance to being pulled under the train and lose a limb or life.
Every culture has its elders who want to explain things to these whippersnappers, but it comes from a place of love. And I was surprised that, despite her tough exterior, being in a position to help riders touch the soft spot in Cece.
I know that all of the works that I've done for these kids coming off the tracks and stuff, I'm going to be blessed in heaven. I'm going to be blessed. When I take the west wind, I'm going to be riding high. Sorry. I just try to be righteous.
So all these years later, Cece still makes sure she has enough space for any riders passing through, even the new kids. But whoever you are and wherever you're going, when you stop by Haver, the price of admission is a lecture from Cece.
I tell them, what you got to do, first priority is you. You got to be righteous with thyself before you can be righteous with others. That's the first thing I say. Be righteous with you. You understand that? I don't ask for respect. I demand respect for the simple fact I've earned it. I'm CC Ryder, for Christ's sakes. I don't put up with stupid shit.
After that visit with CC, I had the answer to my question. When Rebu threw down her sleeping bag, I bet she had people she knew and trusted nearby. This was a comfort to me, that she had joined a community that lived by a code of loyalty and compassion. There was a network to tap into, a web of generosity and support. She hadn't just run off on the life she knew, but toward a life she wanted. There were dangers in this world. Oogles had to learn quickly or be left behind. And the women I'd met from the rails were some of the fiercest females on Earth. They'd have to be, or they wouldn't last long. By now, I had a pretty good idea of the train yard, inside and out, and the hair-trigger insanity of the camps. And I understood that this community might protect an Oogle like Ruby. At least I prayed that she was with people who were watching out for her, guiding her between squats and train yards. Because no matter who you traveled with, the point was to hop the train.
All right, and we're in.
We're in.
We are now trespassing.
To understand the realities of train hopping, I know what I have to do next. I'm going back to Roseville to find out what it actually takes to hop a train.
Hello. This is what it sounds like inside the boxcar.
You know, you just run next to it, you grab the ladder, and you just run with it until you get your balance, and then you just kind of like swing on.
I wasn't even doing nothing, honestly, except taking a nap. He was being a little fucking handsy with me, you know, like rough.
So I remember throwing my pack, and I just knew right in that moment I had to go right then, and I jumped.
That's next episode on City of the Rails. City of the Rails is hosted and written by me, Danelle Morton, and developed in partnership between Flipturn Studios and iHeart Podcasts. Having a strong reaction to this episode? Think we got it all wrong? Call in and tell us. Especially if you're a group of badass women who ride without men to protect you. I definitely want to hear from you. The number is 707-653-0339. You might end up on the show. At iHeart, our team is executive producer and showrunner Julian Weller, senior producer and editing master Abu Zafar, and our excellent producers Emily Marinoff, Sheena Ozaki, and Zoe Denkla, who survived hours and hours coaching me how to speak, with production support from Marcy DePina. Excellent original music every episode by Aaron Kaufman. Our theme music is Wayfaring Stranger, performed by Profane Sass. Thanks to Scott Michaud at Flail Records. Our logo is by Lucy Quintanilla and uses a photograph by Mike Brody. For all of you who make it to the end of the credits every episode, I have some good news. Mike got in touch with me. He made a bold move and ditched his cell phone, but not his email. Shout out to CC Ryder for bringing me out to Havre, Montana for the first time ever. And also to Morgan for being so candid and available to answer all my many follow-up questions. Our executive producer at Flipturn is Mark Healy. If you want to follow along, find us on Instagram at FlipTurnPods. And at iHeart, thanks to Nikki Etor and Beth Ann Macaluso. Want to help us out? You can do it very quickly by leaving us a rating or review wherever you're listening to this. It will help more people find the show, and it's a big deal to all of us making this show every week. We'll be back next week in Roseville, because it seems like I'll never get the fuck out of Roseville, next week on City of the Rails.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah, and some waves so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.